Hello, this is Sean.
I'm Justin.
And this is the Dot Matrix. And I think I almost goofed up our own intro because usually I think we say, hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I am. But I said our names first.
Right.
But I guess anyone who would be, you know, tapping in, to borrow a phrase from Sarah Palin, tapping into our podcast would know who we are first, probably. Unless there's someone in South Korea who's just in exploring mood.
Well, not just South Korea, anyone outside of the 27 people who like our Facebook page.
And thank you to every single one of you who took the time to like our page. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, who cares if you ever listen to it? But as long as you like us on Facebook, then we matter.
We matter to Zuckerberg and Eisenberg. Oh, you did a good Eisenberg there earlier, Jesse. Oh, boy.
Oh, we got to edit that one. Look at that. Level of that one. So we're episode 45.
Yeah, so if we average another one every few weeks, we'll hit our 50 by the December, no problem.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
I'm very excited to hit 50.
I think we'll...
I'd like to hit that. Sorry.
So that you did.
For those who are wondering what Justin just said, it's when people joke about that's what she said. Well, if Yoda said that, Yoda would say, said that she did.
I think right off the bat, we have the name of our next podcast.
Yes.
We should send a link or put a link to that website, right?
Oh, with all the examples of the said that she did? Oh, so funny. I just felt like a little kid looking through that and sitting watching that with our friends and saying, said that she did, like, all the time.
Arguably, it was one of our more classier evenings.
Thanks, Kevin Susie.
So we have a huge list of stuff to talk about because an amazing amount of things have happened and I've just started writing them down.
Yeah, sure.
But we did say on our last podcast, did we not, that we were supposed to read poetry this time? Did we say we're going to read more poems? I'm suggesting we reserve that for the next time, unless you have one.
Well, I do have one, not with me, but I have one ready to go. And I had an idea. I thought if you wanted to, like if you had one here, since we're at your place.
Right.
Why don't you do yours? And then if we have time, and then next time I could do mine, we could almost alternate. Like kind of like, okay, what's your poem? Or I also thought of, you know, next time maybe we can just save it for then and just kind of focus back to the
literary. You know, I have a poem here
that
I was thinking of reading, and I printed out last week when we started to talk about what we wanted to do, but I'm not so sure that's the poem I want to read.
Because I've
been sort of wavering about other things that I've been interested in, so I'm okay holding off till next time.
Okay, well, let's make it a poetry episode next time.
Okay, unless something crazy happens, like a recount in the HST.
Right. Yeah, well, okay, let's do that, and then so people can look forward to that. And
yes,
then
we're nothing but poetry teases.
Yeah. We're going to be, you know, out there for all those who secretly love poetry and kind of the literature side of things. So those who would not probably admit it.
So anyways,
we have a big list of stuff.
So I'm sure on your list, and you've put them onto your iPod Touch, so you've got something on your list. And my assumption is on your list is the HST.
HST, number one on my list.
And I'm just going to have here a little CD-ROM of the HST Referendum Voter's Guide. So it reminds me, maybe we should talk about that first. And
yeah.
It's kind of, you're looking at this CD-ROM weirdly, eh? And my dad is on the CNIB, Canadian National Institute for the Blind, list. as someone who's legally blind. And so I guess they sent anyone on that list an HST referendum guide, thinking that you might not be able to read the materials. And so, and so I put it in, and my, and I get all the mail from my dad, right? And so it's all it is an audio file. And you just listen to the whole thing. And actually, I'm quite surprised. I kind of skimmed through it really quickly. But the person who reads through, he reads like, you know, this is the position, this is the question, and here's the positions from the yes side and rebuttal from the no. Here's the position from the no with the rebuttal from the right. And I was surprised how not monotoned the person was.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually quite animated. And I was like, really? I guess you don't want to put people to sleep, right? But at the same time, I would hate that you'd influence one way or another by the way you read out the position, right? So,
well, did you find it was pretty balanced? Like,
no, I didn't read the whole... I didn't listen to the whole thing. Oh, okay. I got bored.
Well, yeah, and because it's not meant for you anyway, right? So you know going in, it's like, okay, well, I'll just kind of listen to a snippet. But, well, that's cool. I mean, who would have thought? Like, I never would have thought they would have done something like that.
Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty good. Pretty cool, as Miley says. Well, so anyways, HST.
HST, well, you and I had obviously been talking about this since it became on the government's radar,
right?
So to speak, back in, 2 years ago.
May 2009.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We've been talking about the pros and cons of this tax.
Yes.
What it means to try to explain tax policy to the public. How it's had an effect, obviously, on the politicians. And I think another way is relations between community members, right?
Sure.
Like, different ridings.
Sure.
Different ways of looking at things.
The results came in on Friday, and I was, as you know, at my computer right at 11 on the Elections BC site, just refreshing, refreshing, refreshing.
Yeah.
And it took, like, you know, they said 11 o'clock was going to come out, and it was probably like 11:10 or 11:11 or something. And then suddenly it populated everything, the whole table, like the total aggregate vote, yes or no, and then per riding. And I was shocked, because, as you know, I emailed you and my sister Vanessa like at 10:30.
Yeah.
And you were at some meeting, so you didn't respond right away. I was so unsatisfied when you
didn't respond. I bet you were thinking that. You're like, come on.
I was like, come on, I'm on Outlook Exchange. I should get your email automatically.
Yeah.
And I said, just for the record, I predict a very, very slim no vote. That they would vote 50-point-something% no to keep the tax.
Keep the tax.
So, and yes means you get rid of the tax.
Right.
And then I was shocked when it got populated. I was like, 54.73% yes.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, literally dropped. I had no idea. I mean, and of course, we've talked later, and we've talked since, and you, when you finally responded, said you would have predicted that.
I would have predicted the opposite. I would have predicted that, actually, you know, considering the total, 54.something%, that's probably around what I would have predicted. And I don't mean to come off as, you know,
clairvoyant.
Yeah, I didn't want to sound like that, but...
A cocky clairvoyant.
Cocky. Only due to the fact that I thought it would be scrapped in the end, after having this almost kind of belief that, oh, well, maybe, you know, people will really start to think about what it means and actually vote to keep it. We've had it for a year. Let's keep going, see what happens.
Yeah.
But then, as the last days drew to a close, I was kind of like, you know what? I think people are going to vote to scrap it. And I didn't think, though, if they did do that, that it would be by a lot. I thought there was a lot of people that came around and were like, you know what? Let's keep this going. But I probably would have thought maybe more to scrap. Mm. But can you imagine, though, if it was closer to 50-50? I mean, that would have been... That would have been a different situation altogether. No one could really claim a huge victory. But I saw your email after... I saw your both emails. I saw your email first where you said it was scrapped. And then I saw your prediction email. And I was like, oh, I wish I had been able to get in there. Because, you know, we had this meeting at start, like, 10:30, quarter to 11 or something. And I have my computer with me, and I had that page open, and I had my email open, but I was so busy typing, taking notes during this meeting that I just, my head was just not in there.
You were too busy doing your job. God.
I was doing my job, and I even had CKNW open, and the audio player open, but on mute, because I had to go to this meeting, because I was listening to Bill Good. Anyway.
Oh, it's funny, because I my whole reasoning was, you know, I needed to know, because we, in our job, we do a lot of consulting work, and so that is a big impact on HSD for us. So I just figured, you know, that's a good enough reason for me to want to be distracted by this. And I emailed all my colleagues. I said, looks like we're going back to GST. And, you know, and it actually, you know, in many ways, I mean, if I think about it in our particular circumstance, at least for my work, which is, you know, we do a lot of consulting work, and a lot of our clients are nonprofits, so they always think about the bottom line. And for a long time, our consulting work has been just GST, so just plus 5%. And a lot of our clients ask, you know, one about, you know, can this, your quote for this consulting job, just be inclusive of GST, of taxes?
Yeah.
And so it's, let's say it's $1,000, right? So, okay, $1,000, we'll make that including GST, and then we'll just sort of calculate whatever the tax is on ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And, but now, you know, and so and usually with most consulting, you know, rates, you have somewhat of a bit of a margin to make a bit of a profit. That's sort of how billable rates go, right? Because you got to pay for things outside of just the hours of your staff, or even your consultants pay whatever, get paid a certain amount of hours. And so when HSD became applicable, you know, our rates were even lower, because we had to eat up 12% of tax instead of on that $1,000 instead of 5%. Or if you were quoting with HSD, with taxes, $1,000 bill is $1,050 with GST, but it's $1,120 with HST. And that's a big difference. Like,
that is, you know, it's substantial. Yeah.
So it's in many ways in that sense, and I could see people kind of going, and even though they get some of it rebated because they're or reimbursed because they're a nonprofit, there's some certain exemptions, right? But people were still kind of going,
yeah,
can you bring that down a little?
of course,
right? And so
it's just natural,
yeah.
Well, I saw a thing where just in that last week, like I think it was, I don't know if it was on CKNW, but one of the news shows where a guy from some construction company was saying that he wants the HSD to be scrapped because when he gives quotes to people for like a big renos project or a big something like that, and when he adds on the HSD, it's a deal breaker. Like, a lot of people are like, they just won't do it.
Right.
Like, there's certain jobs that aren't absolutely necessary that need to be done.
Yeah.
And where people will think twice. And that's often I think a viewpoint that just didn't get out there very much. And I think the important thing to remember is that there are especially when it comes to tax policy, there's obviously going to be a difference of opinion on each side. There are valid points on each side. You can't say that the people who voted to scrap it are uneducated. And I'm talking in a general sense.
Sure, yeah.
Or just weren't doing the research. Yes, there were probably lots of those people.
Sure, yeah.
But you just had the people maybe on the no side to keep it, who also were just like, it's almost kind of like an attitude about it, like a mindset. It's like, well, we're just going to do this because the government was voted into power to make decisions on our behalf anyway. Well, let's just do this. Or the biggest thing we keep hearing is that businesses save administrative costs, which in turn reflects other ways that they can save and they can pass that savings on the consumer. There's examples where I think that has probably happened, but there's a lot of examples where it probably hasn't happened.
Sure, yeah.
But where I work, our company is a small business, and yeah, my boss was not pleased. After that meeting, once I saw your email, I yelled out the result.
Right.
And my boss is like, you're kidding.
Because I mean, they've been talking, because you guys are in the and film industry or the you know, that sort of, and from my understanding, there was part of the exemptions or the tax breaks or whatever that was all like the HST was very beneficial for that particular industry. I mean, that's one of the first people they talk to in the news stories, right? Like, oh, it means Ontario is now much more attractive than BC, right? In that sense. And you're right. I mean, who you stand on the fence is really your circumstance. I mean, some industries benefited, some didn't. Some consumers did, some didn't. And it just all kind of depends. And one thing I'll say is that I'll be glad to go back to the PST because I have been over-tipping people at restaurants constantly because I have been doubling the HST by accident. I did it did it the other day. I totally forgot. I left this ginormous tip.
Yeah.
And people must think I'm like the most generous guy ever. I'm leaving 30-something percent tips. I'm like, what am I doing?
I do it all the time.
And that's what happened to me when I was in Halifax. I forgot they had HST and I was used to... You know, and I doubling the GST, which is 7% to be 12, and topping it up. I was doubling 14% and topping that up.
Whoa.
I was like, I'm missing Papa just had like fish and chips. I'm like, I must have loved those fish and chips.
It you are so grateful for those fish and chips. Yeah, it is tough, you know.
But it's funny because this conversation isn't going the way I thought it was, but it was just good because I guess we probably would have just, if I imagined how this conversation was going to go, we were just going to basically almost rehash what we've said in this topic and previous things, right? Around there's economics to it, there's the whole, people are voting against the democratic the process and so forth and that sort of thing, right? But I don't think we need to rehash that necessarily.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what everyone's been talking about since it happened, the punitive vote and all that. I still think, though, that what needs to be kind of talked about, and I don't know if the government or anyone else is really going to notice this, but it's like when you look at the writing breakdown, like newspaper articles, and I mean, the Vancouver Sun, that Pete McMartin or something?
Yes, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying, I apologize if I'm saying his name wrong, but his article, I believe, said something like, less educated ridings vote yes to scrap it. You know, like, he's insinuating that it's almost like a class warfare we've got going on here in a way.
Right.
And I think that's kind of weird. My riding was voted heavily yes to extinguish the tax, which I came to expect.
Sure. And my riding, which is Christy Clark's riding, voted, I think, 58%.
Okay, so not one of the highest.
Not one of the highest, but definitely a solid majority.
But, you know, North Shore, Vancouver, Colchina, huge, huge no to keep numbers. And I keep saying no to keep or yes to scrap because it keeps it straight in my mind.
Sure, yes.
So I think that's what needs to be talked about. I think before people are, you know, the government's like, they keep saying in their press releases, and Christy does it too, which it's weird. It's like, although we're disappointed, you know, it's almost like this level of condescension in a way. Because when you come out and say, we're disappointed in results, it's like, okay, well, you might be disappointed, but, and then they balance that with, offset that with, but we respect the opinion. It's like, well, we know how the government want us to vote. Maybe they should not even say that. Like, they should be a little more like, we see where this went. We get it. Here's what we're going to do. Instead of being a little bit like, well, you know, I don't know. You know, like, there's a little bit of an error to that.
Yeah, I never picked up on that, actually.
I mean, it was just me. I just think that, you know, I think... The Liberals, I don't think they're not, I think they are looking out for the best interests of the people and the economy in general. I don't think they're out to screw anyone. I just think that sometimes just because you want things a certain way and the public clearly isn't agreeing with that route, then you really got to start to be kind of like, okay, kind of tone down a bit of the certain way that they're communicating their position, I think. Because I think that will help them in the long run anyway stay in power.
Right.
they really got to be like, you know what, you really got us. You know, I think they got to come down a bit from their...
Sure.
Come back to earth a bit on that, and I think that will help them, and it will help kind of get rid of this divide between the yes and no side, like, and hopefully Vanderzam will just stop.
Yeah, well, you know, and I have to say, I think the... You know, I don't know, the rhetoric on the economy side, like, you know, well, the Vanderzam rhetoric is one thing, and I'm like, I'm not a, you know, a huge Vanderzam fan, and it is unfortunate that he's sort of got a lot of kudos from this, and Adrian Dix talking about, you know, it's a solid for the middle class, and I think, you know, in some sense, there is a little bit of, you know, there's a reality to that, because there was, you know, the independent study that said, you know, for on average, you're going to spend $350 more a year. You know, which I think is probably pretty valid, especially if you make mistakes on tipping, like I do.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be high, right? And, but, yeah. You know, but I find, you know, those, that's still very political rhetoric. I do think it, which is what I was going to say, which is a little bit contradictory to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm arguing, but my take was that I didn't pick up on what you picked up on. I picked on, up on, finally, the government, who's talked a lot about the economic benefits around a modernized tax system, tax collection, and doing it all, you know, not duplicating all the collection and federally and provincially, all that sort of stuff, finally basically saying, okay, we heard you. It wasn't necessarily about convincing you this is a positive policy, because I think for the most part they could probably say that they made that point, because you went from 87% anti-HST to a referendum where it was 54%.
Right.
So they made that case. And I think a lot of people did switch over from, sometimes anger did dissipate.
Sure.
And the other time, and once anger dissipates, people can look at the tax piece. But there was still that policy piece, mm-hmm. saying, you know, we can't lie to our electorate. And we can't lie by omission either, and say there's say nothing about it. I think you got to take your chances and say, you know, this is on our radar before that last election, and not necessarily HST, but say, you know, we really want to look at our taxation system or something, you know, and just be open about it. And they probably would have lost a bunch of seats, but, you know, maybe they would have either got a minority government or actually, no, you wouldn't get a minority, because there's only two parties. They would have had a...
Oh, right.
You know, they would have had, like, you know, maybe a slim majority.
That's
maybe
what it is. Slim majority.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they were scared, you know, probably. And it was really clear that they were talking about it before. So, you know, and so people don't take kindly from when people circumvent that process. And so when Chrissy Clark and Kevin Falcon saying, yes, you know, we're disappointed, which I didn't pick up on what you were picking up on that, but following that up with, okay, we're going to revert back exactly as it was, because we want to respect the election, we're not going to, the referendum outcome, we're not going to sort of circumvent and put back PST, but with other exemptions than it was before. I mean, that's what they were saying. At least that's what they were reporting.
That's what they said, yeah.
So I know there was some discussion about they would, you know, bring back PST, but it would be like different exemptions, and it would just be like the HST anyways. But I, you know, I don't think that's not what I'm hearing. And no. I can't imagine a government not learning the lesson by not listening. You know what I mean? Like, that would just be even worse.
That'd be,
you know,
mind-boggling. Yeah.
And hopefully they don't take 18 months, you know, and that sort of thing. But they're really clear that this is about a repudiation of government process, of democratic process. Mm-hmm. And so I never heard a lot of that from the no side. I mean, they were sort of saying, yeah, we should have introduced it better. But it's such a great policy. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's just, now they're just saying, you know, we fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and we're taking the lumps and we're going to turn the page.
Yeah.
And bring it back, and then maybe have a conversation about what can we do, you know. So, I'm just curious to see what happens down the road.
Or, I mean, 2013.
Yeah, or... I mean, there's going to be this election, right? And maybe, I don't know if she'll do an early one. My gut is I don't think she's going to do an early election now that
I don't.
Make any sense.
By next spring, it will be a year away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so, you know, I think they'll bring in the PST again, and then there'll be an election. You know, and my gut is I think you're going to have at least a couple of years of PST and GST the way it was before you even start to think about implementing something else, you know?
Right.
And I'm sure they'll never call it HST. Probably could never be called HST. You know, but they'll do something, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, and especially interesting if the NDP get in, you know, in that next election. What would that mean? Because, you know, I had a discussion with someone just the other day asking, oh, you know, well, if the NDP had won the election, you know, you can't tell me they wouldn't have put it in. Because if the ball was rolling. And I said, you know, I don't know. I don't have a good sense of that. Like,
I don't think we do.
I think, you know, obviously there were discussions with the civil servants about whether or not this is possible and what you could do. And if the NDP got in, I would think they would take that opportunity to either, like, I really don't know, you know, so I it's hard to sort of say, have that judgment, right? So
I have a feeling somehow NDP got into power, I think, and the HST was going, and we were doing the HST, I think that they would actually do something close to what Christy Clark was suggesting, which would be bringing it down. Yeah. I don't think a government that comes into power makes the effort to actually change a tax policy.
Yeah, well, they would do. I mean, Christy did what Stephen Harper did with the GST, right? Like, where.
Yes.
You know, because. And I think you're right. I think if the NDP wins the next election in 2013.
Yeah.
You know, and the HST was still. For some reason, there was either no referendum or the HST stayed.
Yeah.
The NDP would be forced to lower it. Like, I just. It would just be great political move, and
you know,
people would just love them. And
all they'd have to do is be like, "Well, we got to pay back this whatever money. We could keep the money and just tweak the tax." Yeah. And I think people would do that. I think going down to 10% was actually a really good idea. I think that was a smart move, and I think it was part of some of those last votes that went to the no side. I honestly do.
Well, I have to say that possibility made me pause.
Right.
I thought about it.
Because it was going to be a step-by-step thing. It wasn't going to be right away. It was going to be introduced over time, over like 3 years or something, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you could only do it that way, because otherwise there would be such a revenue shortfall that you'd have a huge hole in the budget. They wouldn't know how to fill that. I think it would be good because our HST at 12% was already lower than some other provinces anyway, who have it, like in the Maritimes, like 13 or 14 or even
13 15, or 14 or yeah, so
15%, like Nova Scotia or something. It's like it's a different situation though. Way smaller province, way less people, totally different circumstance, I think. But if we had gone down to 10, we would have been even more competitive.
Yeah,
the envy of the country. Oh my God! Like I thought it was the biggest win-win situation for everybody. It's like, it's only 3% more than the, not even, it would be less than some other items that were already using both taxes.
Yeah, I would have gotten my TV right away.
But that's, to me, that was I thought that was a brilliant move. And I'm surprised that more people didn't think about that one. Maybe something like that could have been announced a little earlier, perhaps.
Yeah.
Like, maybe just after she made the premiership, but...
True. Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're at where we're at, which is what everyone's saying anyway. What are we going to do from here? I think... I didn't hear much about this plan B that they were talking about.
Right, yeah. That came out in the papers like a day or so before, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't really speak to that, but I think whatever they do... I think you're right. They're going to go back to the PST GST system, and then after that, they would be like, okay, how are we going to improve our tax system we have? And they're going to have, but in the meantime, they're going to have to offer, or at least come up with, you know, in their annual budgets, some ways of providing some incentives to industries that need it, like the film industry and so on. So we'll see. We'll have to come back to this.
Yeah, and I'll just sort of end with, when you sort of said that, I thought that was interesting, because I think when you think about it, HST will come, or GST, PST will come back, like you said, shortly before the next scheduled election in 2013, right? Or whatever it is for the province.
It's about right at the time.
Right?
Right?
And so, you know, they're going to have to start a process really soon to talk to people about tax policy, because you know that what will have to be front and center in this next election campaign is, what are you going to do about taxation?
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to ask now, and like, you know, like, you're going to, this is the new election. You know, the fiasco of HST, what's your stance on it now? Right. And so that will be interesting to see what both parties, or I guess the third party, the BC Conservative Party, have a stance on taxation for the next election. I think that will be interesting to see.
And I think too, like, whatever their position is before the next election, whenever it is, has to stick. They can't go from not on our radar to, hey, look what we thought of. And, you know, I was reading the timeline. Sorry, I'll just say this quickly. They've been throwing this in the newspapers and stuff, like, okay, 2009 election. Literally, like, 10 days later or something, they started to have these phone calls or meetings with federals about this possibility of HST or whatever. Well, hey, it could be true what they're saying. Maybe it wasn't until just after the election that they started thinking, hey, what if we, you know, try this? But they were so far into their own bullshit that instead of saying 2 months, 10 weeks later, we're going to do this, they could have said, hey, we are thinking about introducing this. What do you think? But that would... Like, they didn't do that. They could have done this year-long consultation process. But you know what it was? It was they were so much in the hole from the global economic meltdown. They're always going to use that as the reason. Yep. Just like they thought there was weapons in Iraq. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'll say to that is it's a genuine, pure lie that they didn't think about it until after the election. Like, you know what I mean? Like... You know, completely. Whether there's phone calls or not, like...
I hear you.
I've worked with the federal government to know...
Yes.
Enough to know that nothing happens that fast.
And nothing just all of a sudden appears in people's heads like, oh, hey, what about this?
See, you know, and I think even that discussion about 9 days later, you know, and saying, you know, we're thinking about it, you know, I think that still would have had unfolded the same chain of events. I think they probably needed to wait. But like you said, they couldn't wait because they needed to... They promised a balanced budget, and this is one way of getting it. They probably should have waited a year or two and then said... Like, they should have... Like, today, they should have announced saying, you know, especially if Gordon Campbell's not around and Chrissy Clark's here, like, and, you know, then you use the opportunity of a new leader and a new government looking at things differently, so anything in the old election platform is now toast, right? Then you have a chance that it could go through.
But I asked my sister this question about the HST. Was it a lie about they didn't think of it until, after the election? And she's like, well, and I don't want to quote her, but what I understood from her was kind of yes and no, in the sense that it wasn't a lie in the sense that they didn't really consider talking about it and thinking about it for the current time that they were in and a way to help their issue that they had. But they had, what they're not saying is that they had been thinking about it for, they've considered it in previous governments going all the way back to the Clark and the NDP in the 90s. Like, they had considered the HST taxation policy for a long time, but it never suited BC until now was the problem. They'll never say it like that in the press, right? But it's true, because provinces before have long had the HST, like, since the 90s.
Yeah.
But it's never been the deal that BC wanted to make with the federal government until shortly after the election. Which, again, I am with you. I think they knew they couldn't mention it during the election because they wouldn't have gotten elected, because they were an even slimmer majority than the previous one. Anyway, that's that.
Oh, HST. It's funny because now, what's on your list otherwise? Because we had
Layton.
Yes, it's funny how
vacations.
Right. Well, and that's an end with vacations. It's a fun thing.
Yeah.
But it's so, you know, This is really interesting because when we were first thinking, I was first putting this list together of what we want to talk about. You know, I was thinking about, you know, the NDP federally, and Jack Layton was on there. But, you know, originally I had written down because of his interim choice for interim leader was apparently a card-carrying member of separatist parties. But, you know, how fast? I guess we haven't done a podcast in probably 3 or 4 weeks now, I guess, if you think about it.
It's been a month.
And that's as much time as the world can shift dramatically, you know?
Sure.
So, I mean, nowhere in the conversation in the last week or so are people talking about that. They're obviously talking about the passing of Jack Layton, which, you know, I have to say, of course, for those of you who are listening in, there's only 27 of you, and all of you are probably local. So if you're somehow
Canadian,
finding us from Denmark or South Korea, as you've been so
South Korea
focused on,
Indonesia.
Jack Layton is the official is the leader of the official opposition in the federal government and the federal system, and you know he announced last month that he was you know going to fight cancer, and unfortunately last week, like a week ago today, actually he passed on, and it's been a week prior to us sitting down and recording this of a lot of emotion, a lot of you know public shows of affection and grief. The funeral was just on Saturday. Which I was quite impressed with. I quite enjoyed it. If you can enjoy a funeral, but it was, you know, nicely done. And so forth. So that's sort of obviously taken a big piece of the dialogue about the NDP of late. But I have to say, I was affected quite a bit. I didn't know the man, but anyone, you know, who's gone before their time, and especially at a time when you had a sense, if you follow politics, that he was destined for more greatness in terms of meeting his vision and his goals for his party and the federal scene. There's always sadness about that, I guess, if you follow that. But so my first reaction was just that I did take a reaction to it much more than I thought, and a lot of people apparently have as well. So, any initial thoughts?
The same. I have to say that I was very sad, very, very sad. When I saw in the news a week ago, and Lane was like, "Oh, they're talking about Jack Layton." As soon as she said that, she's like, "No, I want to hear the TV. They're talking about Jack Layton." I was like, "That's it," because when we saw him in July 25th on the news talking about how he was stepping down. Fight cancer again. Just his condition, and I think a lot of people talked about this. You know, and I of course, there's always that chance of coming back from that. But as I think we've talked about, when I saw him on the TV, and hit the sound of his voice, how gaunt and frail he was, I thought, oh, this isn't. I just couldn't help but think, oh, this is going to be a huge stroke of luck if he could make it back from this. So when the news came, although I was shocked to hear it and I had a strong reaction to it, I in another way, I wasn't surprised because he did not look good at all. And I thought, well, you know, at first you just think about that day, the sadness, and you think about, you think of the short period of time from winning the leader of the opposition to now, just like, what is that, 3-4 months or something like that?
That's right, yeah.
And you can, and 2 months from last being in the House of Commons and not thinking that he seemed ill at all. So, other than maybe still recovering or who knows. So I think that turned from that the next day, then it turned into his legacy. Just his, how he communicated with Canadians. Like you said, he didn't know him. I've never met him, but he felt like probably the most genuine of all the federal leaders.
Well, when you look at who the competitors are for that name, it's no problem. It's a cakewalk, really. But I did cry. Like, when I heard it in the morning at 5-something in the morning, my radio went on, and I was in bed, half awake, half asleep, but with tears in my eyes. It was kind of weird. But, you know, what I find is interesting, like, now that there's been some time passed on it, and of course everyone has to grieve in their certain ways, and, like, I do feel some of the commentary about it is a little, not overblown, but definitely, like, you know, he's taken on, like, Jack Layton, what could have been, is become such a legend now because of, you know, passing too early, that, you know, if an election called was, if there's an election today, no one could be able to compete against the what if of a Jack Layton. Because he grew in, I think he grew in the role, because I used to think when I first saw him, like, oh gosh, why would I ever vote for a used car salesman? You know, like, it just,
I thought the same.
You know, he just didn't have it. And then he grew and grew, and his last election, this one that just happened, I was really impressed by him. But, you know, when he passed, and everyone started to say all these wonderful things, and it's rightfully so. I mean, he deserves a lot of kudos, and he is, you know, the most likable of all the federal politician leaders these days. But I think people, to me, the disconnect I had was that people were talking about him, I think, the Jack Layton 2-4 years from now. You know what I mean? Like, I think if this was 4 years from now, I think there is a shot he could have been prime minister if he had grown even more like a fine wine into the role and actually proved the 4 years that that there was, you know, the decorum in parliament was a different way and whatever. I think there were starts of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he was quite there in the way that people describe him. But that's natural. I think people think to the positive sides.
Yeah,
you know, and so I don't blame any of that, but, you know, what I blame is that horrendous article by Christy Blatchford that you linked me to, or your friend linked me to, basically saying that, but in a very negative kind of way.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm like, well, there's a time and place for that, and it's not that. And, you know, people are saying, oh, well, she's just saying what a lot of us think. And I'm like, well, if a lot of you think that way, shame on you. You know, like,
yes, I mean, thank you.
You know,
thank
I mean, you. If
that's a good way of retorting to that. Yep.
I mean, I don't know, if I was Chrissy Blatchford and I died, I think I'd like people to think about me positively, think the best of me. And then over time, then you can debate about how much of a bad reporter I was or whatever. You can talk about that, how I was always negative. But there's something called human decency. And if you don't even have human decency, then you cannot throw that first stone. You know what I mean? To use a biblical term, which I never really use. But, you know, and so... Yeah. You know, I'm just saying, oh, well, that letter to Canadians is very political, and Evan Solomon at the funeral, post-mortem of the funeral, said, you know, it was political theater. And frankly, of course it was. Like, the speech, as stirring as it was from Stephen Lewis, well, it's very political. The video was kind of political, you know, like, but it's sort of like...
That's who he was.
Not just who he was, but that was... the arena in which he worked. Like, if I... Yeah. I said this to Who did I say this to? I said it to my friend yesterday over lunch. I said, you know, if I was a truck driver and I passed on and I had a funeral, most likely it would be very truck driver-y, you know? Like, people would talk... Maybe they'd be honking horns or whatever, you know? And that's what made it so interesting, was Jack Layton was able to sort of merge the personal and the political. And this was... in full view, in the letter and in the and in the funeral, and you know that's okay, because and especially he was able to shape a lot of it, because he had enough, you know, of his mind, and his body was failing him, but obviously his mind was not
right,
and so he was definitely talking about, you know, how he wanted the sermon to go and writing that letter and how it was timed and everything. And some people would look at it as manipulative, maybe, if you were going to think really negative or crass about it,
or vain, or
something. Vain, but that's the nature of the job he had and the life he led, and that's okay. How can you expect someone to act as if they were a ballerina if they've been a politician all their life? You know, like, it's a very public job, so there's a public way you're going to handle it, and that's okay.
You know, we'll link that article so people can read it and see what they think, and hopefully they can put comments and judge for themselves. I think I read that article wondering, what is it that she's actually trying to accomplish here by this article? It's one thing to try to come out and be a straight shooter, and you know, I've read other people who support it saying, yeah, you know, whenever I read her articles, I'm always like, yeah. It's like, well, that's if you want to talk about separatism or
for the HSD
immigration, or whatever, you know, but it's clear how she thinks about things. It's clear what political stripe she is. It's like, what is it that she was actually trying to say? I read a lot of negativity, but I actually didn't really see anything that really mattered to anything in the article. You know what I mean?
Sure.
She just kept talking about how his letter was vain, almost, I would say, narcissistic. She was talking about how this funeral was overblown. And the problem I have with it is, what is she saying to all those people who had this outpouring of reaction to his death, which was 99% sadness? Like, what is she saying to all those people? Like,
you're not allowed to feel.
We're not allowed to feel. Are we supposed to have no heart? Like, it was a heartless article. And it was very, like, pathetic in parts of it where she would try to throw in these little, unfortunately the battle was lost, or he tried so hard to fight, and da-da-da-da, whatever she wrote. I was trying to read it as, although I was pissed when I was reading it, I was trying to read it with some level of level-headedness and sure. Say, okay, there's got to be a few points in here. There's got to be a few things that will tell me, yes, that's why she's writing this. But there was nothing. I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I don't want to overreact about stuff. But what I think she's forgetting is what you said, is people are allowed to react how they want to, especially if it's in a positive way to someone.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean positive by, I mean, it's not a good feeling, but you're feeling that
trying to turn grief into something constructive.
Constructive. You're trying to remember the man the way he should be remembered. And a lot of people really think that he was everything that he was talking about himself. Sure. He wanted a better world. He wanted all this. Yeah. I think there are people like that, and I think he was one of them, you know?
Well, you know, and I think whether or not you agree with him or not, I mean, like, when they had the reverend during the sermon of the funeral, sort of, one of the last things he said, you know, calling out, basically, you know, the message about calling out to make the world a better place, and he points to the casket and goes, you seen how, what it looks like to try, you know?
Yes.
And I thought, yeah. You know, and that's it. I think that's what people are connecting to, the fact that this man, whether you believed in everything he was fighting for,
right,
you knew he was trying his best for most people, you yeah. know? And I mean, that's the kind of reaction, the reaction you see when you, at Nathan Phillips Square, where everyone writes a chalk and fills the whole square, it rains, and then they fill it again, like, that is a symbol of people understood that he was trying to represent them.
That's right. The people he's trying to reach. Yeah.
And that's what you do when you have a viewpoint in life and an ethos, which I truly believe in. And of course, you know, not everyone will agree how you do this, but you either agree that, you know, you don't leave anyone behind, or that you fight for the survival of the fittest. And I think when you fight for the survival of the fittest, you'll never have the reaction you do, because not the fittest is not the majority.
No.
And isn't. You know, and if you truly believe that no one should be left behind, then you're going to be more inclusive. You will be a bigger tent player in the political arena, and you'll have people who will not agree with you, but kind of go, I you're trying, and that's okay.
I know. It's so simple when you think about it. Like, she, in that article, is actually just showing of how she doesn't even understand that. And that's what boggles the mind, that when you click on National Post, along the top. Her name is right there. You could, it's like, you don't even have to search for her stuff to read. Her blog is front and center, yet she's completely missing the point. Yeah. And to come out, I mean, someone's got to come out and do it first. It's got to be someone, right? It sure. happened to be her. She comes out and just, I'm sorry, she trashed the man. She did.
Yep.
And you can't hide behind getting it real or not being afraid to speak the truth. Or no, that's not what that was. That was just trash, trying to trash someone that you didn't agree with how he conducted himself in a public way. And I think that's like the worst. Like, I can't even imagine what people say about her when she dies. And let's hope that she doesn't go through anything near what he went through. That's the thing we have to remember, right? It's like, what do people say when people who have kids talk to people who don't have kids? Do you have kids? Well, don't talk to me about that until you have kids. Well, you know, it's like, I don't think that's the right attitude. But again, until you've had an illness like that, or been someone close to someone who has, you're not going to know, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to think about life in a different way.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, in a fundamental way, in the end, it's, you know, Jack Layden was a human being, was a man, an individual. And when you think about the funeral and the things that were really touching and all the, you know, the touching tributes, it was about him as a grandfather, him as a father, you know, and
right.
And I think a lot of times people who disagree think about individuals as an ethos, a political position, a party. And he was all those things because he ran the party and he was the leader of the party. But then they mix grief with that. And you're grieving an idea. You're grieving a man who has died.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's a fundamental thing. Like, a person, a human being has passed on.
Yeah.
And you can't forget that. It's not as if someone broke a Ming vase or you know, like, oh, that vase was ugly anyways. Like, you know, we're talking about human beings, and we forget that. Like, especially in industries like politics, or, you know, where it's about ideas and it's about theoreticals sometimes, right? Like, you forget we're all human beings. It's not, you know, the whole thing about it's not business, it's not personal, it's business. Well, it's always personal because it involves human beings. That's unless right. robots are interacting and purchasing goods for services and money, then it's all personal by definition to some degree, right? And we forget that. So
the same thing happened when I went to a wedding a few days after Michael Jackson died. I think I may have mentioned this on a podcast when it happened 2 years ago, but because we have been podcasting for that long and longer, people. But even the it was in a Catholic church, and the, I guess he's a priest? Priest guy, whatever he was, he said as a part of his, what do you call that? Like his speech? Like
sermon?
Sermon, thank you. As a part of his sermon, he made a point to recognize the fact that Michael Jackson died and we're going to pray for him. And
was that at Karen and Sean's?
No. It was another friend of mine at... was it?
I remember the reverend in that ceremony talking about it.
Was the reverend at their ceremony really colorful? Like, was he kind of...
Yeah.
Maybe it was hers.
Okay, maybe.
Okay. And I remember, I don't know who was saying it, that a lot of people were like, what? You know, like, wait a second, this isn't about Michael Jackson, this is about, but it is kind of about Michael Jackson, because he touched that many people.
Sure.
It's not like he's going to mention someone that only he knows and the rest of us have no idea. He's talking about something that had a huge effect on so many people that I'm sorry, it's worth mentioning. Like,
sure.
And especially when you're talking about it in the context of life and death, people taking that step and caring for each other and different things that can happen through life, well, that's all part of it, right? It's all about what affects us. And I think it's the same with Jack Layton. Just because he's a politician and if we're all acknowledging the fact that he spoke to a lot of people no matter what political stripe, then why is anyone even arguing about this? You know, like, why is anyone ever having a problem about it? I don't think you'd find anyone else that, of those other leaders or anyone since, I guess, even Trudeau, who's really managed to speak to the country.
Right.
Like that. So I don't know what, I don't think there is much fuss. I think we just hear about the people have the fuss because people would be like, how could you have any fuss? Right.
Right.
Those are the people that scream the loudest anyway.
Yeah.
I've never actually supported the NDP federally in any way. And that's not, it used to be because of Jack Layton, partly, like way back.
Sure.
But there was many other reasons along the way that I never ended up supporting them at that particular time. But that doesn't mean I didn't admire some of their positions on things. And I think that, and I was still hugely affected by his death. So yeah. What does that say, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I'm going to try to find a link too of the sermon from the Reverend Brent Hawkes, who was the one who delivered the sermon. And I have to say, like, of all the speeches, you know, Stephen Lewis and Mike and Sarah Layton, I enjoyed his. I thought his was the most relevant, actually.
I found too.
And I haven't found a video clip of it yet, and I haven't really looked that much, but we'll try to link that too, because I necessarily want to talk about it, but I just think people should listen to it, because it was actually pretty, it helped bring everything into perspective, I thought. I mean, some of it was a little bit, you know, obviously political, but it was well done. I thought it was very well done.
You know, a lot of people are saying that, you know, he was more of an activist and a career politician than someone who could have been like a prime minister or whatever. But then I started thinking, well, what is the point of government anyway, if it's not to just help improve people's lives? Like, in the end, isn't that the whole point?
Yes.
I mean, why govern? And I don't think it should be a welfare society or anything, or you know, any other type of, you know, 100% socialist communist society. But, oh my God, if we don't have some level of social democracy, like they kept talking about during that funeral, it's like, where are we? Like, I just don't understand. Because down in the States, they keep wanting to protect the wealthiest people. I mean, you read what Warren Buffett said, right?
Sure.
Like, well, that will, unless we're careful, that will happen here, where the top 2% are going to be the most looked after. And we just can't have that. And I think maybe down the road we'll understand what Jack Layton was saying about that kind of thing. It's really ahead of its time. Like, I think the kind of basic principles are simple, but when it comes to actually thinking that it's possible and actually engaging in that and making it work in a society and with government and the economy and environment, I think we'll find that, oh my God, like back in 2000, whatever, you know, like, we kind of had the answer, but we, as long as there's a conservative government or even maybe some liberal governments, we're not going to get there, right? So that's what I keep thinking about. You know, it's, people think, oh, well, we're too busy just helping people all the time and having government in our lives, too far in our lives, in our pockets, and then why have a government? Like, why do we have, like, a city councilor? It's like, well, we want to decide things to make our life better in Vancouver. It's like, well, we want to do that on a federal level too, don't we? I don't know. That's what I thought. I don't know why the conservatives are in power. I don't know what they're there for to do, but I don't know what they think their job is. That's, I want someone to answer me that. Like,
it's sort of like they're saying, I mean, in the States, it's a little bit more of a absurdity when you have, you know, Republicans running to be in government, but they're ethos and their political being is that they don't believe in government.
I know.
You know, and like it's a absurd version of what we're having here. And I think, you know, I think I've quoted this in previous podcasts too. Like, I always think about that West Wing episode years ago, right? And I think I've said this many times, right? Where the two people who work in the White House are like snowed in, and they're talking to this guy, and they're in this bar, and he's, you know, snowed in too because he's on this road trip with his daughter, showing, you know, doing all the college road trips and seeing which colleges she might go to, you know, next year, and bemoaning the fact that, you know, it's really expensive and that sort of stuff. And he said it so perfectly, and I truly believe this in government, which is why I'm not necessarily hard left or hard right, is that, you know, it's not supposed to be easy. Life's not supposed, you're supposed to work hard for it. But the role of government is to make it just a little bit easier. Like just help out a little bit. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, you're right. I mean, we're living in a community. We're living together. We choose to live in cities and countries because we know we can't do everything on our own. And we're not supposed to do everything on our own. Like, yeah. I'm not a blacksmith. I'm not a farmer. Farmers aren't doing what I do, right?
Yeah, like, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And all are important in different ways in different times and blah 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 blah. Anyways, I think we've exhausted this one quite well because we've hit the 1 hour mark.
But we're just getting started.
I know. and let's end it with the vacation conversation.
Sure.
And let's be pointed about this. And you know, we say we would do this podcast after one, doing our camping trip, and two, after you have had gone out to Whistler,
yeah,
and having that weekend which just passed. So maybe in a way to keep it nice and short,
yeah.
What's a highlight from each of those two adventures for you?
Okay, well, I'll start with the camping. Sure. You know what? As much as I love just being together with everybody, one of the highlights for me, I don't know if I could pick the all-time highlight because I'd have to really think about it, but what comes to mind right away is when Mike and his son Gavin took me out on the water, and I was in a little tugboat behind them, just sitting there letting Mike paddle, and Gavin had a little fishing pole and he's, you know, practicing fishing, and I was just sitting there taking pictures. And just being out in the middle of that lake on this little floating device, out in the sun, it was fantastic. It was very meditative,
contemplative, maybe.
Contemplative,
restful.
You know, we're like that, right? Like we get in a moment, we get contemplative. Like that's our big thing. I thought that's what first leapt to mind.
Okay,
so. For those who are wondering, the lake was Alice Lake, right, just north of Squamish.
Well, I'll say mine, and then you can end with your Whistler highlight. My highlight from camping, like you said, I can't, you know, not necessarily the top highlight, but the one that comes to mind, is not the luxurious outhouse. It's not the amazing food, but notice how I just did that so I could say those things? Anyway. But I have to say, it was the experience of putting up my tent for the first time. With Steve's help, of course. Yeah. And it's a 3-person tent, so it's very luxurious for one person. And I kind of felt like pampered for a little bit, you know? Because I was just in my own tent and had my own stuff and had the Therm-a-Rest, so it's all good. I didn't sleep completely on the floor.
Right.
But it was just, it felt really neat. I really enjoyed being in my tent. That was my big highlight. So
yeah, right on.
And Whistler.
Yeah, well, Whistler was great. So we weren't right in the village. It was just on the way in. So at Nita Lake, which is, you know, I guess another 10 minutes before you get to the village. I think the highlight, there was a lot, but... You know, we did meet up with Mike and Tara the day we got there. And that was actually at Rainbow Falls, just around the corner from Nita Lake. It was a nice hot day. We were out there. There's a lot of other people, but we took our dog and we met them. And they were just sitting there under a tree. We hung out, and then Mike and I went for a swim. Again, this involves Mike. And I actually got into the water this time. I feel the bromance. I know. it was good because I thought, oh, well, I got to get into the water at least once this year, you know. Because it was a bit cold to actually, you know, go swimming when we were at Alice Lake. So we went for it, and it was colder than we thought it would be, I have to say. But once you got in there, of course, you know, it was good. And we swam out to this kind of, it's like a, I don't know, a raft or whatever, like dock, sure, whatever. There. And then you got out and you're just stood in the sunlight and you could see Whistler and Blackcomb from there.
Oh, wow.
And the gondola that goes from peak to peak. And Mike was talking to me about how they went to that. And so, I mean, that was a great highlight. And because it was so relaxing. And, you know, our hotel, our lodge stay, the Nita Lodge, was great. Sorry, I have to say there was another highlight I have to just mention just because it was so wonderful.
Fine, break the rules.
Sorry, I just broke your rule, but very quickly, we had dinner at the restaurant, the Aura restaurant, which was part of the Groupon deal. It was a $25 voucher that we used. But dinner was fabulous. And we were outside overlooking the lake. Dexter was comfortable in our suite. He actually didn't cry when we left him in the suite. And dinner was great, and the wine was really good. Mm. And I had a little bit of port at the end. So the dinner plus, you know, Tara and Mike the day before was the highlight.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's a perfect way to end our little podcast, our extended edition. I think we've hovered around 50 minutes or so for, like, the last couple of ones. Again, it's probably a good reason for us to try to do these a little bit more often so we don't accumulate. Because we have stuff on this list that we never got to, like seeing Citizen Kane outside. I've never really done. I want to talk about seeing Pride, as I've never been to the Pride Parade here in Vancouver before, which is kind of cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
You know, like, but also all those topics are part of the podcast that never was. And... saying that we'll try to do more podcasts, which we have to, because we have to get to 50. So,
yeah, we'll get to 50 by the end of 2011. I think even if we do another one, so like September, October, November, December, if we did at least one more than once a month, between now and the end of the year, we'll hit it.
Perfect.
Okay, well, thanks for listening, and please send comments our way if you have a few minutes of time, just because we find it most valuable, and we're always interested to wonder what if people like what we're talking about or not. So, and if they share the same opinion,
perfect. And that's at thedotmatrix.com or on Facebook as well. We're there. Find us there, facebook.com/thedotmatrix. I believe is what it is.
Yeah.
And otherwise, till next time.
Okay. So long.